Hey, whether you enjoy listening to Breaking Down Collapse or Building Up Resilience, I think you'll also really enjoy our bonus content on Patreon.
Yeah, Kellen and I take 20 minutes each week to talk about the news that's happening all around us and Collapse as it plays out. We like to have a little fun with it, but also make sure that you're aware of what's going on in the world of Collapse.
We look forward to having you join us there. The link to join us on Patreon is in the episode description.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
All right, Michael, we sure appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much for being here.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invite. We'll see how this goes, I guess, but right now I feel pretty excited.
Yeah, Michael's been a good friend of mine for a long time. We've worked together in the past, and it's just a joy to get to have Michael here and kind of hear some of his expertise, which I know there's plenty of and that our listeners will find a ton of value in. So maybe I'll just start by asking, when did you first own a gun and what was it?
Good question. So as I think back on this one, think about first owning a gun. A lot of people define guns maybe based on like an ATF definition or something like that. But I think most of us, at least when we're kids, we understand that a BB gun is a gun. And that was my first gun. And that goes a lot into the, I guess, philosophy and theory about guns. My parents both were relatively conservative and comfortable around guns. They both grown up in rural areas, and so they'd seen responsible use of firearms for farming and for ranching and for general rural duties. So for them, it wasn't strange at all to have a kid with a BB gun. In fact, it was probably strange to think of doing it the other way. And I don't remember exactly how old I was. I would guess that I was probably somewhere around 8 when I got that. But the key to my, I guess, to my philosophy on all of this, everything we're probably talking about, was how my parents treated that. It wasn't just a side purchase or a toy or something like that. It was treated as a firearm in the way that I was taught to handle it, in the way that it was gifted to me. I was shown how to operate it, and I was with my dad. I read through the entire instruction manual, so I understood everything about it, what it could do. Even back then, there were still some safety warnings with a little BB gun. I still remember all the circles with the diagonal line through them, showing the things you're not supposed to point at and what you're supposed to do with it, how many pumps you're supposed to put into it, and that was the start. So, you know, I've owned several firearms since of different varieties, but everything that I've thought about or learned ever since then has always gone back to that very first experience, that it wasn't a toy, and it also wasn't some kind of a dangerous weapon that I should be scared to look at. It was a tool, and I was taught to use it appropriately and respect it for what it was. So, you know, I think a lot of times we do a disservice to children and youth and even adults when we look at things like, I mean, today Airsoft and Orbeez are really popular, and they're available on Amazon or in Walmart, just like BB guns used to be for people my age. But I don't see the same level of support from parents and understanding from society. I think a lot of people just treat them as toys, and they get left out in the grass to have a sprinkler on them. If I've ever done anything like that, I can't even imagine what the punishment might have been for that kind of act, because it just was not okay to treat that kind of a tool that way. And it was the same way with a shovel. Right? If I left a shovel outside and let that thing get rained on, there was problems. A hammer? No way. Right? They've all got their purpose, and I was treated to respect them for what they were. And we just don't do that nearly as well, I think, as a society these days. So for whatever reason, I do think that that's a big part of the reason that we have so much fear surrounding what is otherwise an inanimate object, a tool. And I'm not trying to dismiss at all what a gun can do, but I think that there is some basic definition to understanding what a tool is, and that a gun is a tool.
So, Michael, you started off as you started describing your own experience owning a BB gun. You talked about the way it was gifted to you and the way that you were taught to use it and view it and take care of it. I guess on both like an individual level and more of a societal level, when you talk about responsibility regarding guns, what does that look like for you?
That's a big one. So I think about it, that's the definition of responsibility. Typically we think in terms of relative to, right? So responsibility relative to something that can make a small or a big difference, the responsibility grows. And I don't know that there's anything that I personally, and still I think for the most part, society would respect more than life. There's arguments, I think, that are becoming bigger against that. But simply living is about as big of as a gift, if we want to call it that, as there is an opportunity. And so something that can take life, and especially something that can take life so quickly, I think the responsibility is probably or should be in line with life. So, and that's what I was taught. That was part of that first instruction with a BB gun, was this could kill a person. If you pointed this in the wrong way at the wrong time and you pulled the trigger, or even if there was just an accident and you had this pointed in the wrong way at the wrong time, someone could die. It's a big deal, right? And when I've got parents who do respect life and who have taught me to respect life, that are teaching me that by holding or using, touching this item, I could destroy life. Well, I suddenly have a tremendous amount of respect for what that thing is. Again, my parents weren't teaching me fear. They were teaching me respect. And fear can be a part of respect, but it's a very minimal part, I think, in the grand scheme of things. There's a lot of ways to respect something, and fear is maybe one of the least and most powerful, depending on what your goals are. And in this case, I think it's maybe one of the least powerful because of what can happen if you're afraid. And if you're using a tool like a gun out of fear, boy, that's a scary proposition. And I'm even referring to a self-defense situation. That's a scary proposition because fear clouds judgment. So I don't know. Does that answer your question, Kellen? I'm not sure if that hits it directly or not.
Yeah, that really does. That's very helpful. And I think for a lot of people who are listening, you know, they might not have much experience. They might not have had the same kind of experience that you had growing up, where you were taught to view guns in the way that you were. And so if somebody's listening and they're thinking, oh, I think gun ownership in my situation would be a good idea, but I don't even know where to start to make sure that I do that responsibly, what would you recommend?
I really appreciate that you're asking that, actually, because I've had people ask me this before, and And I've had several people ask me, actually, from several different walks of life, someone who's never touched a gun, never even seen one in person, to people who have fired them. Maybe they went out with friends or family and they fired guns and they were maybe a little bit nervous or scared, didn't know much about them, but they didn't want to be left out. And anytime I hear situations like this, man, my heart pumps a little faster, like, oh, shoot. You know, these things are potentially life-threatening. They can kill, right? And someone can literally, if they're old enough, walk into a gun shop, throw some money down, and walk out of a gun shop with a gun, and that's all they know. Wow, that's crazy, right? And it's also one of the basis of our country. I mean, the idea that someone can just have a thought and then act on it, whether it be something as simple as folding some paint on off or something as complex as building a Model T Ford and then selling it to somebody else. Like, whoa, that's crazy. The amount of freedom that we enjoy in this country, it's crazy. So I'm a pretty big supporter of the idea that we get to make our own choices. And I hope that by enjoying those freedoms from a young age, again, whether it be folding a piece of paper, gluing a piece of paper, or otherwise, so we're coming up through school or not, maybe we're just trying to learn on our own. There's a lot of different ways that people grow up, that we're learning how to apply the appropriate amount of respect and responsibility to the decisions we're making. There is a big difference between throwing some money down and buying a gun and folding a piece of paper in half. Again, it's relativity, right? What the consequences could be of that decision. So, you know, in my mind, if someone's going to buy a gun, it should be based on understanding what that gun can do. And I don't think there's many people out there that are old enough to buy a gun that don't have an understanding that it can take a life. And therefore, it requires some training beforehand, before buying a gun. That the best way to learn how to shoot a gun is not to go buy a gun and shoot it. Learn how to shoot a gun is to get some proper training before you get a gun. And there's a lot of ways to do that don't need to cost money. They're going to take some time, and hopefully that makes sense to someone who's taking the responsibility of something that could take life to put some time in to understand it first. And maybe there is a scenario where in a certain situation, a person can't do any form of training outside of buying a gun and shooting on the wall. I can't imagine what it may be, but it's not for me to determine what everyone else's situation is. So, hey, if they're going to go on and buy a gun and figure it out on their own, so be it. But boy, I hope that they're doing it in a way that they're not endangering someone other than themselves. Because, yeah, if that's the situation, that's less than desirable.
So I want to come back to that question of training in a little bit, and kind of get some ideas from you about where one would find, you know, the resources and all that. But before we get to that point, I want to ask, you know, if somebody's listening to this, and maybe they're coming from a place of fear of guns, or maybe they've just never owned one and are not really sure. Maybe they do own one, but they don't really know why. Like, what would the why be for why a person would purchase a firearm, in your opinion?
Man, you guys have some good questions. I appreciate this. I really, like, genuinely appreciate these questions. And this one is a varied response, because a lot of times as I watch the news, especially with politicians, I see one or two points. And those are the only reasons why someone could ever possibly own a gun, where it's either because they hunt X animals, or it's because they are going to defend themselves against X criminal. And that's it. There's nothing else. And I think, man, anyone, and I say this a little bit loosely, but I think I'm pretty qualified to say this, just based on my experience, anyone that can make it that blank does not understand firearms. It just cannot be that so many people over so many years have come up with so many different designs and so many different calibers and so many different propellants and so many different projectiles that there's only two uses for all of these hundreds of thousands of variations. That's just not the case. And, you know, we a lot of times dismiss something like the military, where we say, well, that's different, right? That's somebody overseas in some desert somewhere, and so they have to figure that out. I mean, okay, there's an argument there, but I think it's a pretty easy one to take down, at least from my mindset, because no single war and kind of the variables too. I'm just going to take one single war. No single war, no single battle even is going to come down to only one option. And I think this is probably a little bit larger part of the philosophy behind this. I've got a really good friend who is in special forces, retired recently, and he was at the highest level doing some of the craziest things. We all watch a Jason Bourne movie and think, whoa, is that real? This guy was doing that kind of stuff. And I asked him one time, we were in a situation just talking. It was normal public situation. No one would know either one of us from Adam as far as, you know, one out there trying to wear graffiti t-shirts that say any funky gun clauses or anything like that. But I asked him if he was carrying. And he said that he was not. And I said, I'm surprised because you're like that kind of guy, right? You carry and shoot guns and stuff more than anybody else does. And his response was something very close to, you know, in any kind of a normal life situation, if I can't take care of the situation without a gun, I've already made too many mistakes before I'm in that situation. And I really appreciated that because I agree with that, right? From my perspective, that's right in line with me. But I was surprised to hear him say it just because of what I believed his background to be. But it kind of proved my point, at least from my theory, that the more understanding a person gets about the different uses of these different types of firearms and weapons, the less clear it becomes that there's either this one or that one. And that's why I said earlier, if someone's looking to buy a gun, you know, there may be some situations out there that they can't fathom where there is just no other person. They need to go buy a gun and train themselves on it and shoot it. I can't see it. But they more than likely don't actually know what would be best for the scenario that they're buying a gun for. And I think that is one of the questions that someone needs to answer at least fairly well before they buy one is, why am I buying it? And whatever that reason is, maybe it's just because you think it's a cool looking thing you want to hang on your wall. Okay, that's great. But if that's the case, then man, buy a replica that doesn't actually shoot because you're putting it in a place that it could be used without you knowing, right? So that comes down to that knowledge of what's best. And to really hit one direct point on your, I mean, both of you kind of asked a little bit about this, so I'll hit it really directly. It's not a similar do this. There isn't actually a place that I know of in the entire country that you cannot access through the web to find local shooting areas within a few hours, any place in the country. The most gun friendly areas, you know, you're talking your major cities in Illinois or major cities in California, New York, there's still going to be a shooting range within a couple few hours of any spot that you can find. I guess maybe I got to quantify that with some traffic in somebody's lecture here. But there is a place to shoot, and there are people that go there to shoot. And as a normal U.S. citizen, you can walk into any of these shooting ranges, look at the calendar, look up when they're open, call ahead, see if somebody's going to be there, ask the person that answers the phone, hey, do you guys have anybody that would be willing to take a few minutes with me? And I'm absolutely positive that there will be a line of people that are happy to share their thoughts on what would be best for you, and let you shoot their guns, let you try out the stuff that the range has or that the store has or whatever the venue is that you actually settle in to find out what you feel, what you like, what fits, and to talk to people that have more experience than you do about what makes sense for what you're trying to accomplish. And that could be something as simple as, I want to go hunt X animal, or I want to defend myself from X criminal. But it's probably not. The more that you talk about it, the more there's probably 5 or 10 or 20 different scenarios in there where you could see, well, you know, I don't actually hope to ever be in this situation, but I'd like it just in case. And I think most people that have shot much are going to say, well, okay, maybe we should get you some training first with hand-to-hand combat, or how to stay out of that situation, maybe just some social awareness. Maybe you need to talk to a counselor about the situation that you're in rather than buying a gun. And maybe not, right? Everybody's got their own opinions and you're going to a public venue, but you're stuck with one. I'm feeling pretty confident that if you go back there on a different day and put a little bit more time in, you're going to talk to a different guy or three or five, and they're going to give you their opinions too. And it's highly unlikely that talking to 3 or 5 or 10 people over the course of several weeks you're going to come out hearing the exact same thing over and over, unless what you're describing is really that simple.
Yeah, Michael, I appreciate hearing those thoughts. And I love that the approach you take is very rational and reasonable. And I think sometimes when people think about gun ownership, and especially individuals that, you know, own a lot of guns or know a lot about guns, they worry that there's like a fanaticism there or an over an eagerness to use firearms. And I've learned quite the opposite. Friends and colleagues that I know that are most educated on guns are usually the most reticent to use them, the least likely to want to find themselves in a situation where they need to use a gun. So it's great to hear your thoughts. When I think about the people that are listening to this podcast, generally speaking, I think it's going to be folks who anticipate that the future is going to be more difficult than it is currently. And that like there will be some level of societal decline and maybe political tensions will increase. And maybe there is a worry about more criminal activity. This is a bit of a loaded question because you talked about how there's like just thousands of variations out there of different types of guns. But if someone were just saying, hey, I want to own my first gun, what's likely to be most practical for my situation? What kind of questions would you ask them, or how would you help them make that decision?
Well, I'm so glad you ended that way. You did. I thought you were going to ask me to name that.
pick a gun, Michael, and tell us which one.
Exactly. Thank you for finishing my question the way you did. You know, part of the reason that I said what I did about talking to people and not just jumping online, because man, talk about easy, right? If you want to get 1,000 opinions, spend a few hours online, and you've got 1,000 opinions there. But are they really 1,000 opinions, or are they one person that just threw 400 opinions up under 600 different pseudonyms? Like, hard to tell, right? And the marketing that goes behind that, the political agendas, like, who knows? But when you personally go down to a shooting range and you can see a person and talk to a person and not just get their theories on something, but watch them shoot, and then look at their target with them and see that they actually do know what they're talking about. Or, wait a minute, were you shooting at this target? There's only one hole and you shot 10 times, right? Like, there's something to be said for how much weight and gravity you're going to give those opinions as you gain them. And again, going back to my earlier point, with the respect that an item like a firearm deserves because of what it can do, and I would sure hope that someone that's going to buy one is going to go and get some opinions and spend some time deciding what to do first. But that's what quantifies the answer here, you know, to say what they should be looking at first. The questions they should be asking, it should be the ones that matter to them, right, based on their scenario. If we're talking specifically about the world in decline, it's real easy. You know, what you're probably going to see online over and over and over and over and over, depending on the forums you jump on, is a pump action 12 gauge because it's always totally reliable and it's got to be the Remington 870 or Mossberg 500. That's the only one. Or if it's a firearm, or if it's a handgun set, then it's going to be a Glock 19 because 9mm is the most common. You can always find it. And that's the best size and it fits everybody's hand. And, you know, AR-15s, you're going to get the same thing. So, whatever that is, yeah, you can get all of those opinions online. But when it comes right down to it, if you're worried about the world being in decline, then you have to decide for yourself what that actually means. Are you going to stock up on enough ammunition that you don't really care what's available somewhere else? Are you going to shoot a 12-gauge pump-action shotgun 20 times and not fall over backwards and bruise your shoulder? I mean, you don't know that without starting to ask some questions. And so deciding what actually matters to you is not as simple as jumping online, reading a few forums and saying, oh, well, everybody says that's the gun to buy if the world's in decline. The world being in decline, I mean, everybody has their own definition of that. And you've got to decide what it is for you in order to decide what questions to ask. If the world being in decline is simply that you don't have enough money this week to go out to eat, well, let's figure out, first of all, that spending money on a gun and ammo is probably not the right place to put it, right? Let's figure out what we need to do to make sure there's some food on the table. And if the world being in decline to you is that there's zombies coming through the front door, well, shoot, man, you got to get a tank and a couple of machine guns then. Let's not mess around with food. So, yeah, I think the right questions to ask are very personal when it comes to that. And determining what the gun is, I have had so many different, and I don't work at a gun store or anything. Let's just make sure that's out there. This is just me as a person talking to friends and family and friends of friends and friends of family. But the number of times that I've had someone come to me and say something like, I really want this gun for self-defense. I want to buy a handgun for self-defense. And I know that that means it needs to be small enough that I can put it in my pocket or I can carry it in my purse or something like that. So I want to buy this one, but I was told that I should ask you what you thought before I bought it. You say, well, have you shot it? I mean, have you actually shot it? And most of the time the answer is no, but I felt it and I like how it feels in my hands. And man, that's like one of the scariest things for me when someone that has not shot handguns comes up to me and tells me they want an ultra micro handgun because it feels good in their hands and they haven't even shot it. Because for anybody who has actually shot a handgun, it is a lot harder to aim that thing than a rifle or a shotgun. And the smaller it gets, the harder it is to hold on to it and control it and do what you should with it. The harder it is to control where that barrel is going if you haven't got some training yet. So a lot of times, and you know, marketing is playing a large role in this as well, because these micro guns definitely have a place, and it's a niche that hits exactly what you're asking about for most people. Hey, if everything goes south, I want something on me. And in order for that to be the case, it's got to be small, which, by the way, is not true. That's a lack of training and knowledge if you're thinking that. It's easy. I'll totally agree with that. But it's not necessary. And so deciding what it is that you actually need, it, I think it just needs a little bit more a little bit more question personally, just listening to others before that decision is made. Ask the questions personally. Try things out personally. If you can't find somebody that's got that exact model, find somebody that's got the closest one to it. You know, go to these different ranges and ask around. Somebody's going to know somebody's going to know somebody that will meet you at the range on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock and let you try theirs.
You've mentioned a couple different types of guns. You've talked about handguns a little bit, shotguns a little bit. You mentioned an AR. So maybe just give us a real quick brief rundown of maybe the major like classes that someone might own a firearm and some of the advantages and disadvantages of each.
Cool. Okay, I'll try to keep this really general. Because I guess, you know, you've kind of got three main classes. If I really try to generalize it, you've got rifles and handguns, and I'm going to separate long guns into rifles and shotguns. So rifles, shotguns, and handguns. But within those two general categories, man, I'm telling you, we can really break it down to a lot of different purposes. And that's why so many different exist, because there's so many ways to use them. But I'll start with handguns, and we'll break it into two main categories and then break those down. The two main categories would be a revolver-type handgun. So it's got a hammer and a revolving cylinder. Most of us are familiar with those through cowboy and different Western-type movies in history or occasionally newer movies. And then you've got, again, making these really general, but a major class. We call it the semi-automatic non-revolver type handguns. So even with a revolver, you can have a dual-action revolver that every time you pull the trigger, it's going to fire. Totally semi-automatic weapon, right? You don't have to actually run the lever with the other hand. You can just keep pulling the trigger. If I were to call them like the plastic guns, what most people are familiar with in any modern movies, everybody thinks Glock when you say that, but all of the major gun makers are making several versions of a semi-automatic handgun that looks a lot like what everybody associates with a Glock. Glock came out and I mean, they took over major market share in the entire world. Great marketing, great business model, did everything right. But as a result now, Glock, that the word Glock, a lot of people that aren't really familiar with guns think of that as a large, plasticky looking L-shaped gun that fires every time you pull the trigger and never runs out of ammunition. They're magic. The magazines in those things hold thousands and thousands of rounds, according to every video you've ever seen. So breaking it into those categories, now I think what's very important if we're talking handguns is size. Because the amount of weight typically has something to do with the size of the gun. So when we talk revolvers, typically we're talking about a full metal frame, no barrel handgun that weighs quite a bit more than these plastic versions. Again, I'm going to use the term plastic to represent all these other, all the modern John Wick style guns, right? And because they're heavy, revolvers, which are made mostly out of heavier metals, they don't throw as much recoil back into your hand. Now, you shorten that barrel very much, where you make the hand grip much shorter, and all of a sudden, a lot of the weight is going away, and the recoil is going to throw the front of the barrel up in the air, just like what we see in the old movies. In reality, it doesn't happen much with most of those revolvers. That's an actor throwing his hand to make it obvious that he's shooting for the video. But they're not terrible, especially in most of the smaller calibers that people get in. For the most part, and I'm making a big generalization again here, I'm trying to keep it really, really general, but for the most part, revolvers these days are not going to be shot in the typical plastic gun calibers as much. Most people shooting revolvers are going to do it in either the old classic cowboy style iterations, or they're going to go in a 22 long rifle, which is the one that most people are familiar with as being the smallest and the lightest recoiling. It's a rim firing. You typically can load quite a few of them into a magazine because they're so small. So more of them would fit in the size of the grip that fits in your hand than a larger caliber. When we switch back over to the plastic ones, the size matters as well, but this has a lot more to do with how much grip space you have. So how much of the gun is actually fitting between each of your fingers and your palm, because that gives you the control over holding the gun in the right direction and especially over holding the recoil, because there's typically not as much weight in the hand grip portion of the gun because it's made out of plastics or polymers. And most of the weight is actually going to be the ammunition that's coming up the magazine between your fingers as it's getting filled into the chamber. So they're going to recoil a little bit. I shouldn't say the felt recoil and the control is typically a little bit less unless the hand grip extends down past your pinky on the hand on your firing hand. So the shorter that grip gets and the shorter the barrel gets and the less weight there is, the less there is to use to control the actual weapon and the harder it is to point and aim it. I might have gone too detailed there because we're probably taking way too much time.
I'm in a hurry. No, this is great. This is actually really helpful. I'm in a hurry and step in and just say I have been with you at the range to shoot a handgun before. Yep. That was the first time I'd actually really shot or practiced a handgun at the range. And I will say it was very difficult. Like, you see it in the movies, right? And they're hitting stuff from like 50 yards or 100 yards with their handguns or whatever, and they're just cracked targets, or they're really bad. And you watch the movie and you go, why is that guy getting missed every time? That's not realistic. He should be getting hit. And then you realize, no, it actually is really hard to shoot a handgun. I've shot shotguns quite a bit, and I feel way, way more comfortable with a shotgun, right? I feel like I can hit a pigeon, a clay pigeon, right, at however many yards, 30 yards, 40 yards, 50 yards, pretty well. But that handgun, the clay pigeon could be 15 yards away, not moving, and I am going to struggle to hit it. So I totally get what you're saying. So what's the advantage then of a handgun over one of the long guns?
Yeah, I mean, really what it comes down to is just ease of transport or concealability. There's very few reasons why anyone would ever choose to go smaller in a gun outside of convenience, because the larger the gun is, the more able you are to aim it, to control it. And typically the more effect you're able to have with the projectile coming out of that gun, not only because it's more accurate, but because it's probably larger and going faster. The basic dynamics behind ballistics are that in order to propel the bullet, the object out of the end of the barrel, you have to create an explosion. Now, there are some other technologies out there, but not accessible to any of us normal people. So in order to create an explosion and then control that explosion, obviously the longer the barrel is, by any normal principles of science that we're going to talk about here, the more speed you can create behind that bullet with the same explosion. Because that explosion is continually pushing the bullet until it exits the barrel. Upon exiting, now the bullet is left to its own devices and the rest of the power from the explosion dissipates into the air. But as long as that barrel is there, and as long as the explosion is big enough to get the bullet to the end of the barrel, you're going to continue building speed and velocity within a reasonable amount of length for longer the barrel is. So whether it's a shotgun or a long rifle of any kind, your ability, and I'm not saying that they're all built to do this, and again, there's purposes for all these things, but your ability to create more speed is enhanced by the length of the barrel. Because your ability to create more speed is enhanced by the length of the barrel, you then modify your action and create a larger action that can hold a larger explosion, or in other words, a larger casing that has more powder in it to propel the bullet through the end of the barrel. And by making a larger action, you've now made something that in most cases won't fit inside of your plan, and you're therefore throwing a buttstock on it and a forearm on it to hold it between your shoulder and your support hand in order to aim the longer barrel that is going to take a faster moving projectile of a larger action with a bigger explosion and send it at the target. Now, again, I'm giving you some generals. The fact that it's a longer gun or that it's used from your shoulder to your support arm and supported in a longer fashion does not mean that it's a larger caliber. You can buy the smallest calibers that we're aware of in the longest, biggest rifles. They just shoot differently. There's a different purpose. Again, maybe it's just something as simple as being more precise in aiming. If you are shooting at something like a clay pigeon and you want to place it out at 100 yards and see if you can hit it, yeah, that does get more difficult with a handgun, mainly because the barrel is so short and your sight radius is so short that the smallest movement, you can't see it as well because your front sight is only maybe 4 inches in front of your rear sight. So moving the sights back and forth, it's very difficult to see that they're actually not in line. But you throw that front sight 2 feet out in front of the rear sight, and now the smallest movement is a lot easier to see. So you can make a more accurate shot, even with the same small caliber. But it is likely, even with something like a 22 LR, your feet per second coming out of the barrel on a 4-inch barrel versus coming out of the barrel on a 16-inch barrel is going to increase. So you've not only increased your sight radius, which makes it easier to keep the barrel pointed in the correct direction to be more precise at a distance, but you're also shooting the bullet at a faster speed, and it's therefore going to not be acted on by gravity for as long, because it will be in the air for as long to go the same amount of distance.
So you've talked about barrel length. You talked about with our handguns, the grip length matters. For somebody who is super new again to guns, do you recommend that they get all of these types of questions answered? Like, how detailed should someone go, or should, you know, the first time that they are trying to like immerse themselves in learning how to shoot a firearm, do they just go for it, or do they got to get it right the first time with which firearm they buy? Like, how precise does someone need to be in that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm probably, like I said, I'm getting a little bit too detailed probably in some of these answers, but I would probably make an analogy to a car. When someone's turning 16, or in these days, maybe 25 before they first get their driver's license, right? Like, whatever that time is, that's kind of the point, is everybody's making that decision for themselves. You know, when I turned 16 and where I grew up, if you aren't getting your license the day of your birthday, that was nuts, right? How can you not be wanting to drive and gain all of that freedom? But, you know, where I live now, as I'm raising my kids, and my oldest isn't quite yet to the driving stage, and I look at the reason that so many of the kids just a little bit older than him aren't getting their licenses, you know, they're scared of the traffic, or they're not seeing the value in being able to have the freedom that a car affords if they have to pay for it, and if they have to park it somewhere, and if they have to take care of it. Man, good for them. Right? But there were plenty of years as I was growing up, and I was like, what is wrong with this generation that doesn't just want a car to have a car? And I never really felt that way about guns because I just have more respect for them. But as I've realized that populations grow and things change, and I've made that analogy, I realized there's a lot of people that didn't grow up the same way I did out in the country with lots of space to learn and crash cars and not hurt anybody. And the same thing with guns. But the principle still applies. When someone turns 16, there's not a standard car that everybody says, oh, you've got to start with a Toyota Camry with the 6-cylinder engine because that's what everybody has to start on. No matter what you think you're going to do with the car, that's the right one. It's just not true, right? Everybody has different, not only different purposes for the car, but also different budgets, different time, different availability. So, to say, okay, because of the barrel length or because of the grip length, or because of any of the other things, hey, if you're in a position where you have a friend who has a particular gun that they're going to train you with and you trust them, well, shoot that one. That's the one you have access to, right? When most people start with a car that they have access to. They know someone that gives them a good deal on the car, so that's the one they start with, and then learn from there. And the same thing will apply here. If you have access to something, if you go to that range that's 2.5 hours away, and then it's a sacrifice to drive that far because you spent 5 hours and you don't even know who you're going to meet yet, but while you're there at the range and you talk to four different people and one of them is really kind and seems trustworthy, and you ask about, hey, these two guys sitting on the left and the right, they both know him and he's a nice guy, and he says you can shoot this with him and he'll show you how to use it. Oops, that's the one you got access to. Yeah, shoot that one. Just like you would with anything else that you're trying to learn and you don't know much about. If you've got access to it, yes, go shoot it. Do you need to know all of the science behind it? No. But you do need to have enough trust in the situation that you're not picking up on them, right? Or that you're not pointing it the wrong direction and shooting yourself while you pull the trigger. So everybody's going to have to fill it out differently, just like we do with cars. I don't think this is a foreign concept. I just think it's one that we choose not to apply typically when we talk about farmers, because either you're a fanatic that loves them and knows everything about them and needs to own 100 more, or you're a fraidy cat and you don't know what they are, and so you should never learn what they are anyway, right? We've got these two extreme polars that we don't want to actually exist anyone they know. The craziest gun fanatics I know are the crazy gun fanatics described on the internet. And the people that are most afraid of guns are not the fraidy cat snowflakes that they're described on the internet, right? It's knowledge. And so as we come together to figure out what makes sense, it's not a one size fits all. It's not a, this is the car everyone should drive because we live in Germany during 1944, so it's a Volkswagen Beetle, right? Take the options you've got, put the information in that you have, and make the best decision you can.
Okay, so one thing I would love to do, because we always try to strike this right balance between like correct principles and making sure people just have the right philosophy around anything regarding resilience, but also enough there that's it's practical and specific enough that can be applied. And so I feel like so far this conversation has been really good and we've done some of both. But if we can, I want to try getting a little bit specific, and just hear maybe what recommendations you would have for a couple of different given scenarios or specific examples.
My
So,
best.
okay, so let's say I am interested in having a gun just for the sake of self-defense, protecting my family. I don't care about concealability because I don't ever intend to take it out of my house unless I'm going to shoot it like at a gun range. Let's say I'm not trying to like totally destroy an intruder or send them through the wall. I just want to be able to stop somebody, debilitate them if they've come to cause harm to my family. In that kind of a situation, what's, maybe one or two guns that you would recommend?
I'm going to give you what you're thinking that I'll answer with, but I can't because I don't know what house you live in. I don't know what your walls are made out of. I don't know if you've got kids in the house. I don't know what kind of a safe situation you have. So I have to know all that before I can make a decent recommendation.
And is it all right if we explore that a little bit? Like let's say typical house, sheetrock walls. Like it's not a very big house. Any room is only going to be, 15 feet by 15 feet at the most. And let's just say I don't have any young kids. Youngest is a teenager.
And do you have any neighbors within 10 square miles?
Neighbors within 10 square miles?
Yes, but you wouldn't want to shoot. I should probably clarify.
Yeah, so let's say I'm in just a typical suburban area.
So, and this is going to sound crazy, but what I would recommend is that you continue to do your research on firearms. And if you're interested in firearms, that you buy one or two of them based on the recommendations that you get from the people that you shoot with at the range, and that you shoot with them at the range and keep them in your safe at home, not to be used as self-defense weapons. Because the questions that you're asking and the level that you're asking them, you, in my opinion, and this is the great thing about America, right? It's my opinion. You can have a different one and go act on yours. If you disagree with mine, go buy something. But in my opinion, you shouldn't be putting any gun in your house for self-defense in that scenario, based on what you've told me so far, because you're not in a position to actually use it the way that it's going to be used. When we talk about tools, if we're going to talk about a shotgun that is used to shoot a clay pigeon from a thrower at a shotgun shooting range, then the chances that you hurt or kill someone are very small if you follow some of the very basic rules. And not only that, but there's going to be other people that are making sure you're following those rules, right? Helping you remember and think and learn. And at some point, you're going to get to the point where you're going to feel comfortable enough to say, if I needed to use this in a self-defense situation, I could. Do I want to think down that road? Well, the question that you're asking right now, I don't know if this applies to you personally or if it's just a scenario, but in the scenario that you're describing, in my opinion, you need to put a lot more time into getting comfortable with firearms and learning what they can do and why they can do it and how they can do it, before you actually put one in a scenario where you would use it that way. I would highly recommend, based on what you're describing as a normal suburban home in a normal suburban area, no kids at home, that you put some time in at the gym every morning and get in really good shape, that you you care a lot about your diet and your body, and you take a few classes on self-defense with your body and your hands, because everyone can use that, no matter how much background you have with firearms. And it's much more likely in a home invasion situation in suburbia that you're going to come out in a better scenario after everything is said and done if you can just get yourself out of there, right? If someone breaks into your house with a gun and you're in good enough physical shape to jump the window and run 500 yards away, you're probably going to be better off. And again, every scenario exists. I'm not trying to say this is just the answer for everything. But in most of the scenarios that we know about, you'd be better off. Because if you do pull a gun into a situation like that, even in your home, the chance that you're out of court and everything is clear and finished in the next 2 years is very small, right? Whether the person is injured or dies, either way, you've got a lot to answer for, because you used a weapon that everyone knows is capable of taking life knowingly. You had it in your house and you used it. How much time did you put in beforehand to make sure that you were ready to use it in that scenario? I mean, everyone can judge you on it, right? So if you feel comfortable enough to answer those questions, well, then you're probably in the position that you want to think about putting something beside the bed or something in the closet. But you're probably going to have more information on your own than what you're asking me, if that's the case. Again, my personal opinion. I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. I'm just saying, based on what you're telling me, that would be the recommendation I would make in this case.
And by the way, you might think like I'd be disappointed with that answer, but I'm actually really happy to hear that answer.
Okay. If that applies to you, then go get some training and focus on some food and working out.
Well, and I'm trying to think through the kind of scenarios that people find themselves in regarding the community that is listening, the audience that we're speaking to right now. And I think there are a lot of people who would ask those same kind of questions. And I love that you're saying there's so much more. Right, there's so much more digging that needs to be done, and specifics that need to be identified, and that a certain level of confidence that has to be there before you should even be going that route. So, that's why I love asking that question and hearing you ask more follow up questions and give that kind of an opinion, because I think it speaks to a much more respectful view of gun ownership than most people have.
Yeah, I remember one time I asked you, well, I told you I wanted to conceal carry. I knew, you know, I wanted to learn about that. And you, I don't know if you remember this conversation, but you basically asked me, you said, do you? Are you sure? And I said, well, I mean, yeah, I think so. Why not? You know, and you were like, would you be prepared to do what you would have to do in a, if the situation called to use it. He's like, or you said, because if you purchase that weapon and you conceal carry it, you're taking on yourself a responsibility to protect those around you if the case calls, you know, if the situation arose. And you said, are you really prepared to do what you would have to do in that scenario? And I, that was years ago, and I'm still not conceal carrying. So that shows how much I respect your opinion and how much that made me think. But maybe give me some thoughts.
Let me hit that really quick for you. So I really appreciate that, but I also don't want to go over there. If I could have my way and everything was my ideal, the perfect world, there would be no such thing as any form of weapon, period, because everyone would be perfect and get along and love each other, right? Like, that's an easy one for me, actually. That if I can just describe perfection, that's it. But it's not the case, and I don't ever believe that it will be. So that's where the varying degrees of, since that's not the case, what is the response? Because of what I believe is reality, my maybe next best awesome scenario, at least in America where the laws are what they are, would be that, oh, I don't know, maybe something like 6 or 7 out of 10 people were concealed carry. Because there's always 3 or 4 that I just think are too crazy to even have a gun, right? But if I could get 6 or 7 people carrying and everyone knew, hey, if I look around right now and there's 10 people around them and I'm carrying, man, 5 or 6 others are also, boy, I tell you what, I'm not too worried about anybody doing anything too stupid or crazy. So I am not anti-carry. I'm not anti-gun. I am not pro-carry or pro-gun either, as just a blanket statement. I am whatever makes the most sense for this person in this scenario. So I hope I haven't discouraged you from carrying as a general rule, but I do believe what you just stated, that does sound like something I would say, and I agree with it, that if you're going to carry, you need to look at what the tool is that you're carrying. If it's a hammer and it's meant to nail nails into a stud, well, are you actually nailing studs right now? If not, then why are you carrying the hammer?
Right. And I, and that was more that, that was more what I took from it, that I was probably being a little too flippant and like, yeah, I just want to carry because like, it's something that you do. And I can, you know, people get these fantasies in their head of being able to protect themselves or protect others if the situation arose. And I just appreciated that you came at it from a much more sort of solemn responsibility viewpoint of carrying is a wonderful thing. And it's a wonderful responsibility. But are you willing to do what would need to be done if you carried and the situation arose in which, you know, that's the reason that you're carrying? And it's not the reason that I'm not carrying today. It's more about laziness and I haven't gotten the training and the and all that. But
I appreciate that honesty.
but what you said did stick with me and it made me realize the importance of that responsibility and of taking it seriously. If you buy a firearm and you keep it in your home and you have children, yeah, you better be keeping it safe. You better be keeping it locked away. You better know how to store it properly, how to clean it properly. You hear tragic stories all the time of someone who didn't lock their gun away the right way, or it discharged while they were cleaning it, or they didn't think it had one in the chamber and they pointed it and accidentally pulled the trigger and killed somebody or themselves or whatever that might be. And there's just it is such a responsibility, and I appreciate the weight that you put behind that. I think there are some wonderful, necessary reasons to own a firearm. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know I really appreciate that sort of solemn responsibility that you bring to it.
I appreciate that, Corey. To make the counter argument there, you know, we all hear or see or pay attention to whatever news we want to hear and pay attention to and see. And there are plenty of stories about people dying because of something that they did wrong with a firearm. Whether it was on purpose or not, that happens, right? In a negative way. So maybe that's suicide, and maybe it's just an accidental situation, which, you know, in the gun community, most of your people that are in the guns and those kinds of things will actually not say accidental, because accidental implies that there wasn't anything you could have done about it. We use the word negligent typically because the fact is guns don't just discharge. It doesn't happen. something has to happen in order for the round to actually fire. And that something typically comes down to human interface somehow. But the counter argument would be, and this again depends a little bit on your news sources and how much you're paying attention, but there's got to be pretty fair amount of stories on a daily basis, depending on what you're paying attention to, of people who are saving others or who are stopping crimes because they were caring and they were knowledgeable and prepared and ready to use that tool for the situation that it was applicable to be used in. So both sides, again, comes down to the individual and the scenario. But yeah, as much as there is on the negative side, there's a positive side too.
Well, I can think of a whole lot of other questions, and we might have to save them for a second conversation. At some point, would love to hear your thoughts on, mental health and what that means for gun ownership, convenience and accessibility, and how you balance that with safety. Other scenarios that I'd love to throw your way, not only, to say what kind of gun would you recommend, and then hear what kind of questions you'd throw back, because I think there's just so much that's worth talking about here. But I do want to see if I can summarize a little bit of what I've heard from you, and you can
Sure.
correct anything I've got wrong here. It sounds like when it comes to gun ownership, one of the most important things is education and making sure that you're getting it from the right sources. You talked about not just looking online, but actually going and talking to people who are experienced and who know. And then that should be very tailored to your own situation, right? As you try to make decisions for yourself, you could have 100 people, and that means 100 different situations, and each of those situations deserves a different approach that should be very tailor-made. So I think about that, and I think about the fact that respect for what a gun is doesn't have to look like fear. You talked about how you can see it as a tool to be used in the right situation and with the proper training. So all of those are things that are echoing through my mind right now. But anything else that you would add for anyone who's just thinking, how do I be more resilient? What does that look like from a gun ownership standpoint?
Yeah, I'll run to the summary and then we hit that question a little directly. I think you summarized very well on the education side of things. We are, as a society, pretty apt when it comes to education to think that talking about something counts as a full education on most subjects. And maybe on some it does, but I think we discount the value of practice. And I'm speaking, we'll use math as an example. If I watch a teacher running around at the whiteboard showing me how to do a problem, and I talk to that teacher all the time, and the teacher does five more problems and they'll watch them do it, and I'll even maybe say, okay, so then the next step is to do this as the teacher writes it up on the board. That's a form of education, right? It's one of the many forms of learning. But I can all guarantee for most people, me included, when it actually comes test time, I'm going to forget what comes next if I didn't personally go home and practice writing that function out and putting the next step on paper myself with a pen or on the whiteboard myself, because I'm just not going to learn it the same way without doing it. And so when I talk about education with firearms, I absolutely mean the same thing. Depending on what your use is, in most cases, I think it will be to pull a trigger at some point. You got to put some practice in because that one time that you're pulling the trigger for whatever the purpose was that you were trying to get the firearm for needs to be preceded by an appropriate number of practice times. And whether it's with or without actual bullets, there's a lot of practice that can be done. We call it dry practice, where you're depending on the gun, and you need to know if this is going to hurt your gun or not. But striker fire weapons, for the most part, striker fire weapons, it's fine to practice pulling a trigger on an empty chamber. I'm not going to go into that. It's also a thing. But practicing, that's part of education. Doing it yourself absolutely matters. So finding out what that means. We don't give people driver's licenses until they've sat in the car with someone and driven that car and done it properly. We don't sit them in the car to drive until they've gone through the scenarios in their mind and on paper first. Once they're sitting next to somebody, we don't turn everything over to them without having a second person on a brake pedal and a steering wheel fall off. And once we get to the point that we take away that steering wheel and brake pedal, we still force them to put in a certain number of practice hours under a certain number of scenarios before we're going to allow them to actually be out driving a car. And even when we do that, we say that it can't be with other people who could get hurt with them, right? It can only be with their parents. All of these analogies, and I don't want them so much on the other side today, but taking these analogies, they really apply when it comes to educating yourself on firearms. It's not just what you can theorize, it's about what you can actually do as well. If you're going to pull that trigger at any point for whatever purpose, practice and the knowledge and the theorizing, they all have to come together before that trigger is pulled the first time. To hit your question a little bit more directly as far as if things are going to fall apart, again, yeah, if 6 or 7 out of 10 people have firearms and everything falls apart, you know, I think we're falling apart a lot better than if 1 out of 50 has a firearm. And even worse, if 1 out of 50 has a firearm and it's one of those that have firearms, 1 out of 50 actually knows how to use it. Now we just got 49 firearms being held by 49 people who are in a sad world and crazy and worried about defending themselves and acting out of fear. And for every one of those, we've got hundreds of people that don't even have a way to defend themselves that may be more rational or maybe in a better situation, but now they're at a disadvantage because they don't have a way to even the score. And so, yeah, I think if we can increase the education and the comfort levels and thereby increase the proper use of firearms in the situations where it's appropriate, and for the most part, hopefully in this world, that means just theorizing and practice, the chance of the world falling apart goes down.
Michael, thanks for your time today. It's been a pleasure to have you here. And like Kellen said, hopefully maybe one day in the future, we can have you back and ask you some more questions.
I will hope so too. It was fun.
Okay, thanks.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.